and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben. How's your week?
Not too bad. I've been doing some minor decorating touches in the garden where nothing can explode or catch fire or burst.
A few weeks ago, you nearly flooded your house.
So. Yes. So I put some nice trellises up on the fence. Then it's pissed down all week, so I've not been able to sit out on the patio and enjoy it. And then God decided to send a small tornado through East Grinstead, so some of it's come back down.
Excellent. Oh, you fitted it well then.
Yes.
So I'm another brilliant bit of DIY.
I'm chuffed, obviously. However, one other thing I have been doing to sort of reduce the stress a little bit is I've been having a little bit of a chit-chat with a friend of the show, Giselle Petrie-Turner.
Oh, God. It's worrying. It's worrying the relationship you have with this thing, this AI. You talk to it more than you talk to your wife, it seems, these
that
days.
That is true. I don't like your suspicion. You used to be quite enthusiastic about GPT, as we affectionately refer to her sometimes. Yeah. But you seem to have gone off her in recent weeks, and it's troubling to me.
I've gone off technology, full stop. I don't like it. AI will do some good things, but I sort of feel AI should only be used by people who are going to use it for good things. I worry it's going to be used for bad things. I worry that it probably is giving us a lot of false information. I don't like to, I've gone off technology entirely, Ben, so I'm not a fan of technology. So I'm afraid Giselle Petrie-Turner falls to the category of technology, and I'm not that keen.
Okay, well, you know, but you don't know her like I know her. So I stick with Giselle. But I was talking to her about the time recently on the podcast when we were doing the list of five things each on any given subject, and she took the idea and ran with it, which is why last night I sent you a text indicating that I'd like to have this conversation today.
Yes, it was a strange text to get from someone. Do you want to sort of read the text you sent me?
I can do, and yeah, now you put it that way, some explanation or preposition might have been helpful. I did just say to you in the text, if dogs could talk, what five things would they complain about most in human society?
Yeah, now obviously I'm a fairly intelligent human being, and I assume that you meant that's a thing for the podcast.
Yeah.
I could have just thought, well, Ben's gone crackers, and he's just sending me these random, bizarre texts these days, but no. So yeah, I worked on a list of five things that dogs would complain about if they could talk in human society.
Excellent. I'm hoping we don't clash too many times, because I imagine that's sort of a problem with this idea, is that obviously we don't discuss it beforehand, so we might come up with some of the same ideas, but we can't kill the fun. So that's, you know, we've got to do it properly.
Now, the interesting thing is, again, I think the last time we did this, I sort of asked you for some clarification on something, and the answer was always, it's how you interpret the question. But I did wonder, is it things that we do to or with dogs that they would have a problem with, or is it just things they observe us doing in general?
I think you're fair play to take it in any way you want. You can interpret the question in any way you want. I sort of, when I was writing my list, I sort of put it from the eyes of the dog to the dog's owner. Things that we do with the dog that they haven't quite understood or think is a disservice to them or unfair or confusing. But you can, I suppose, take a dog's point of view on any element of human society and what they might think of it. I think they're both fair play.
Okay, I've got a mix of the two, actually, in my five things. Okay. All right, would you want to start with your first one?
My first one I've called dinner double standards.
Right.
Basically, it's a fairly simple concept. Every day, the dog gets the same tin of Pedigree Chum, the same little tin of brown slop dumped into a bowl, and the injustice that he then watches me tucking into a nice bit of steak or a pizza or a kebab or all these things that the dog would love, but every day without fail it's the same old shit in a bowl.
Wouldn't you vary the flavours of dog food though? You know, one day it gets, I don't know, beef, one day lamb, some days it gets dry food, kibble. They love kibble, don't they, a dog? Oh, show a dog kibble. Oh, the tail wags.
Yeah, I still think it's basically, I mean, If I was to give you, you could have the chicken-flavoured slop or the beef-flavoured slop or the lamb-flavoured slop on a sort of rotation, you would still get pretty sick of it, even with a bit of variation in there. And if you saw me, you know, having pasta and chips and all this sort of nice, indulgent stuff, you might think, why is he getting nice stuff and I'm just getting this shit every day?
Yeah. I mean, it's probably thinking, yeah, why aren't you... Because some owners... Some dog owners I've seen on these, you know, dogs behaving badly TV shows, some owners go all out, don't they? They cook for the dog, you know, proper chicken or steak or sausages. You know, they really go for it, don't they? You know, whereas some owners, just as you say, it's the tinned food and that's it.
Did I ever tell you about the time I was approached by someone on the street? And I was working and People talk to me all the time, and this old boy came up to me, and I thought, you know, I'm busy, but I'll be respectful. He said, "Have you got the memo?" And I said, "Memo?" He said, "Yeah, have you got the memo?" And I thought, oh, maybe there's some official memo from work that I've missed that this gentleman seems to know about. And I said, "No, what memo?" "Dog cancer." I said, "I'm sorry. It sounded like you said dog cancer." He said, "Yes, dog cancer." And he then went on this speech about how you must always feed dogs raw meat and never canned food, and it's terrible and it gives them cancer. And he went on, and I'm slowly edging away as fast as possible. It's like, "All right, mate, you have a good day. Yep, dog cancer, got it. Fresh meat, got it. Yep." Couldn't get away from him fast enough. Maniac.
Wow. The other thing I was thinking about this question is, if the dog can talk, are we now in a position to explain to the dog the reasons for it? So could you then say to the dog, yeah, if the dog's sort of saying, "Well, why are you having a nice bowl of pasta and I've got this pedigree chum in a bowl that looks frankly like something that's been shat out by a terrible animal somewhere," right? Can you then not explain, well, this is, you know, it's all made perfectly for your digestive system, for your health, this is the perfect thing. What I'm eating, it probably isn't all that healthy for me, but, you know, that's, I'm trying to do the best for you. Can you not explain then to a dog? Yeah, because I can imagine a dog that can talk is going to eventually say, "Hang on, why am I not getting any chocolate? Why am I not allowed any of that stuff that you lot eat?" And when you eat, there's a look on your face of joy and ecstasy, frankly, sometimes almost sexual joy on your face when you've eaten some chocolate. And I'm not allowed any of that stuff. It's going to come up, mate.
I sort of understood it that it was just what the dogs would perceive as unfair or the problems with human society. I didn't think I'd be having to negotiate with the dog or defend myself and reason with it. So, no, I didn't take it that way. So don't worry too much about having to sort of explain.
Also, with the... Because, I mean, I don't know... I've never owned a dog myself, but I know dog owners, and my grandparents had a dog. And I only remember that dog having one meal a day. And do you ever think, like, the dog's looking at you thinking, "Well, you're having three meals. Why do I only get one meal a day?"
Yeah, that might feel a bit unjust. And then, yeah, that's a good one. And yeah, you get three, I get one, and it's the same old crap in a bowl that's, by the way, not even on a table. I don't even get the dignity of sitting at a table with you. You put it on the dirty floor for me to eat on.
We did used to give my grandparents' dog Rosie, particularly when we were on holiday, Rosie would get for breakfast the same as us. She'd have some marmalade on toast and a cup of tea.
Oh, that's nice. We used to give Maisie cups of tea.
Yeah.
Not in a mug. We're not maniacs. We'd put, you know, make sure it was cool enough to drink safely and put it in a bowl.
Yeah, of course.
She loved it. And it was really good for her coat as well.
Really good for her coat, is it?
Apparently so. We looked it up, yeah.
Wow, okay.
Because if you're going to try that, you've got to Google it first. Don't go giving your dogs things you think they might like without checking first.
Yeah. Mind you, I used to think we used to give Rosie chocolate. I don't think back in the day it was a thing you weren't supposed to give to dogs. It didn't do her any harm.
I think small amounts are fine. I think... you know, a little bit of a chocolate digestive isn't going to kill them, but chocolate very much can kill them. So don't let them eat a whole bar of Galaxy or something like that. You know,
you can get doggy chocolate now, though. I think what I'm saying is, we did it back in the day. These days, they say no, get the doggy chocolate. You can get that now.
I saw a video the other day that almost made me burst into fucking tears. It was a woman who was trying... I'm even choking up a little bit now talking about it. It was a woman who was taking her dog to the vet and she was feeding it a massive amount of chocolate, letting it really enjoy itself. Yeah. And the caption said something along the lines of, because everyone should get the chance to try chocolate once. Yes. And that gave it, you know... That explained what the dog's next trip was for.
Yes.
And yes, I'm tearing up now, so let's go on to your list, please, before I start blubbing.
Okay, well, funny enough, mine sort of carries on from a trip to the vet, really.
Okay.
I mean, you could probably put any animal giving you this argument, but as we're talking about dogs, I'm going to talk about the dog. I think the dog would have an issue as to where the thermometer goes. I think if it ever sees anyone else in a household, any human being having their temperature taken, it's in the mouth, right? I know perhaps in hospitals occasionally it might end up, you know, but for a dog, it's always up there, isn't it? There's not even any option of just the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I seem to remember, I don't know if this is a false memory, I seem to remember when I was a little boy, there was occasions when it might go under the armpit.
I wonder what you were going to say then. Yes, under the armpit is another thing, yeah.
But dogs are sort of lacking armpits as such, aren't they?
Yeah. But it's never, I suppose you can't put a thermometer in the mouth of a dog because they'll bite down on it. I suppose that's the key. So,
if they were a little more reasonable, then maybe we could negotiate.
Well, yeah, this is the thing, right? Is if we could say, if they could talk, we could go, look, you know, I know that's probably highly uncomfortable where we're putting it at the moment. I mean, medically, it's a good place for us to put it, but the mouth is good enough, but you're going to have to play the game with us. Do you know what I mean? You're going to have to close your mouth, not bite down on the thermometer.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going up your arse. That's right.
Yeah. So now listen here, Rover. If you bite down on this, then you might have an ear infection at the moment, but you'll end up with fucking mercury poisoning. So I highly recommend you don't, or it's going up your backside, son.
And imagine that from a dog's perspective, if we've been able to have that conversation with a dog, the superiority the dog would feel over all other animals, because we're only having, only the dogs have got this ability to talk to us now in this scenario. So imagine they're in the waiting room of the vets. There's all kind of other animals around them. And the dog can just say, I mean, it's standard practice for the temperature to be taken. I have the thermometer in my mouth. Yours goes up the arse.
Yes. And we don't share the thermometer and we clean it after each use. Okay?
So, yeah, I think that would be a thing it would complain about, the dog. Don't stick that up there, please.
Well, I had one similar but slightly different to that on my list. So my number two is the betrayal, really, because the dog won't understand. 99 times out of 100... The dog, when you take it for a walk, thinks we're going for a lovely walk. Yet now and again, seemingly almost at random, I've been lied to as the dog. We're in the car. Well, hang on, don't we normally stop here for the park? We just missed the turning for the park. We just missed the turning for the woods and the beach. But now I'm at this stranger's place in a white coat who's just shoved a thermometer up my back passage and he's jabbing me with needles. So I think the complete betrayal of... We don't... Because some dogs tremble when you tell them they're going to the vets and they won't get in the car. So you resort to deception.
You have to sometimes. My aunt's dog, not just for going to the vets, my aunt's dog has got a phobia of... getting in the car for a start, but also going beyond a certain point on a walk. And you sometimes have to trick that dog into thinking you're not going in the car. So we've all been at the house and left the house and walked beyond the car to see whether the dog will think, oh, we're not getting in the car, I'll come out. But the dog's very clever because the dog knew that we were playing this game, and the dog refused to come out of the house because it was sitting there going, well, no, because you're all looking fucking shifty, frankly. You're all shuffling around, moving just beyond the car. No, I'm not falling for this. So deception of a dog does happen quite a lot, depending on the personality of the dog. I mean, another thing that happens with decepting a dog, and I don't know, we've all done this, where you pretend to throw the ball.
Yes.
And you throw nothing. And the dog runs off and it comes back. Now, the thing about a dog is it comes back and the dog will go, throw the ball, throw the ball. But I think it's probably thinking, you fucking arsehole. Don't pretend to throw a fucking ball. Throw the fucking ball is what I'm thinking.
We'll come back to that subject a bit later on my list. But yes, I wondered what number two was on your list.
Number two on my list, I think a dog would, I think it would take issue with fireworks. I think a dog, because some my friend's dog gets absolutely terrified when there's fireworks going off. And I think even if you could talk to a dog, I think it'd be very hard to explain to a dog, we do these things for fun. We make a lot of noise that sounds like bombing. Lots of pretty lights as well, but the sound is basically the sound of a warfare taking place. And we do that for fun. And the dog's going, well, stop it. Just stop doing that, please, because it terrifies me and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of every, you know, it doesn't just happen for one night. It's fucking endless once we get to about November to New Year. Just stop doing that. Now, so other animals, I saw a video this week of a cat being held whilst a firework display was taking place. And I have to say, the cat was enthralled. The cat,
really?
The cat seemed to be looking up at the sky in delight at this thing. And I can imagine a cat being a little bit more laid back about the fireworks. If it knows that it's a lovely show going on, the cat goes, yeah, you know, hold me up, show me it. A dog's going, no, stop that. I've had enough of it.
Oh, yeah, I feel bad because we used to have not Maisie, our dog, we had a different dog called Maddie, and she was terrified of fireworks. And she would go and hide under the stairs and tremble. And there was nothing you could do to talk her out. She was just, no, I'm staying here. I thought it was quite sort of blitz spirit, I thought, to go and hide under the stairs. It seems like a very sensible thing to do for a dog.
I remember my headmaster at my primary school would talk about, during the Second World War, he would have been, I suppose, I don't know, 10-ish, I suppose, during the Second World War boy. And he would talk about his cat. They'd know an air raid was coming because the cat would pick up, I guess it would be either the sound of planes or distant bombs before the air raid siren actually went off, and he'd go and hide under the bed. So they always knew if the air raid was coming because the cat would go, I'm going under the bed now, even before the air raid siren had gone.
That's incredible. I mean, why did the cat... I mean, I get it. Animals can hear frequencies we can't much sooner. But why did the cat associate that noise with I must go and hide? That's incredibly strange.
Well, I'd imagine because it had learned from experience that the noise of airplane... I mean, let's assume it's the airplanes it's heard first. It's learned to associate that with then bombs falling and everyone else going to hide, and a cat would, or any animal would, go and find somewhere to hide just naturally when there's a lot of noises going off, wouldn't they? So
yeah.
I guess it's just, it's learned to associate the noise of the Luftwaffe coming across the channel with fear, I'd imagine.
So yeah, I agree with you. I think I'll allow firework night, but let's say it's one night of the year, and it's between the hours of 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. And after that, there's a £50,000 fine for every firework that goes off.
So is this a pact we've made with the dogs?
I think so, because it does terrify them. It does frighten them. It is generally annoying to hear them going off for days and days afterwards. To look after the animals, let's say, okay, you can have your firework fun, but a couple of hours on the day, that's it.
Okay, what's your next one?
Yeah, leading on from what you talked about earlier with throwing the ball, is that they might think that we are just really irresponsible, clumsy morons. Like, every time you lose that ball, I sort of go running to fetch it back for you, and you throw it again.
Yes.
And I'm not enjoying doing this. I'm just trying to look after you. You keep throwing it. Stop it. Are you stupid?
I often think that, particularly when I'm at the coast and when you watch people throw the ball into the sea for the dog. Now, we all assume that the dog is having a great time, but I was watching one once and I just had this thought in my head that, because the owner just kept doing it, and I just thought, I wonder if this little dog, it was quite a small little dog, at some point was going, will you stop fucking throwing it in the water? It's just, I'm soaking wet, I'm cold, I've had enough of this thing, just stop. But of course, the master's thrown the ball, I've got to go and get it.
Yeah.
Oh, for fuck's sake, here we go again. And we all think, oh, is it? Look at little Rover, he's having a wonderful time, he's loving jumping in the sea, he's probably thinking, just Stop it. Yeah. Stop this now.
It would be like if you spent all day putting a jigsaw puzzle together, and just as you finished it, I smashed it onto the floor and said, right, start again. You'd be pretty pissed off. I meant to do it again and again and again. You get really fed up with that.
I've often wondered what it thinks the ball is. You know, when dogs get very, some of them get very obsessive about their ball.
Yes.
So what do you think the ball is? Do you think it's like a prey? You know, because like some dogs are bred to hunt, aren't they? Does the dog think the ball is prey?
I don't know. I really don't know. But I know certain dogs, things like border collies, Malinois, they'll chase things and hunt them all day without breaking a sweat. So, and they do seem to, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but they don't get bored of it. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they do sort of enjoy the practice, but what, like you say, what importance they put behind the ball itself, I don't know. And again, if they think it's that important, they must sort of loathe us for keep throwing it away.
Yes. Yeah. I think if a dog could talk, I think eventually they would say, look, just stop it now. I've got the ball. I'm keeping the ball. I'm not chasing it anymore. Leave me be. For a bit of peace.
So what have you got as number three?
I think this is something we all do, and I wonder what a dog thinks of it. The weird dog voice we all put on when we talk to a dog.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
It's like when we talk to a baby, isn't it? He's going, hello, boy. Hello, boy. Hello. You're going to go and get the ball. You're going to go and get the ball. And I think the dog's going, you don't talk to anyone else like this.
Don't you patronise me?
Yeah. I listen to you talk to each other in the house. You don't, maybe to the baby, you do this googie googie thing. But that's a baby. I think a dog's aware of what a baby is. I think dogs are clever enough to know that a baby. But this dog, you know, 7 years to 1 year in a dog life, this dog's now like in its 60s, and we're still going, who's the boy? Who's the good boy? Who's the good boy? Go and get the ball. Go get the ball. And he's going, just still talk to me normally. I'm a grown fucking adult, for Christ's sake.
You sounded like a very sort of sexy 60-a-day drag act then when you were doing that.
My name's Rover Divine. So I think that would get on a dog's tits in the end. I sometimes wonder whether, because occasionally I've been around dogs and they just ignore you, and I think they've just had enough of you talking in that stupid way. Because you always do that thing with their name as well, don't you? You don't just say, like, if you had Maisie, right?
Yes.
You don't just go, Maisie. You don't just go, oh Maisie. You go, Maisie, Maisie, hello, Maisie. You do that. And I think eventually they're going, just fuck off with that. Just talk to me normally.
Sometimes it's really sweet when you talk to a dog. They'll sort of cock their head to one side as if they're really trying to understand you. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they're thinking, cocking their head to one side, going, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah. Like in your years, I'm 100, right? Just fucking stop it. Ridiculous. Aww. Right, what's your next one?
My next one is they must be very confused with bath time.
Oh.
And it's not one of the more glamorous things about having a dog, but I'm afraid it does happen, and it's something you've got to deal with, is that if there is an opportunity for them to roll around in fox shit, they'll take it. And they're not just doing it to be annoying. The sort of understanding or the science behind it is they're masking their own scent.
Yes, yes.
So they're doing it for very good reasons. And they think, well, I know what I'm doing. I'm masking my scent. It's because we're on the hunt and it's very clever of me to do this. And my thanks for this is that you then drag me home and put me in a bubble bath and berate me and then make me smell nothing like my prey. So now my scent is washed off. You've ruined the whole plot. Everything's gone to shit. So what? Why did I deserve that?
Wow, that's interesting, because I think maybe a dog would love bath time, because I wonder whether, because this is one thing, it didn't make my list, but I did think this, that I wonder if dogs, and I know people say they're bred to do this, right, but let's, you know, move beyond that, because we're now having a conversation with the dogs. You know, is the dog going, will you stop making me hunt fucking foxes, for Christ's sake? I have to roll around in shit to, you know, make myself smell like a fucking fox. Then I have to run around, and then stupid dickheads in red coats and fucking horns in their mouth, start, and plums in their fucking mouth, start screaming at me. I don't want that. I like a nice bath then. I feel lovely after a bath. I've had dog shampoo. You know, you can get the dog shampoo, can't you?
Yeah.
Have a nice blow dry. The dog probably thinking, oh, this is better. What was all that about this morning? What was all that about the hunt? What was all that shit? Stop that, please.
Unless, of course, they're master manipulators and they've worked out that every time they go around rolling in fox shit, they get a lovely bath at the end of the day.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Right, my next one. I think a dog would have a problem with the word stay, because I think that's a word that it hears a lot. And it always means it's being excluded from something. Like, dogs like to be involved in what's going on. And, you know, you're always going to stay, boy, stay. And they must just do their head. It's like, why? Everyone else is allowed in that room. Everyone else is going into the dining room. Why have I got to stay in here on my own? Stay, boy, stay. No, I'm not staying. I'm sick of staying.
Yeah, they must start to get a bit sort of, well, what's going on in there? What's the big secret in there at the moment? I'm normally allowed in the dining room, but, you know, at what you humans refer to as dinner time, I'm not allowed in there. What are you keeping from me?
Yeah, and the hypocrisy that you all have, this free movement. It's like the dog has, without being asked, got Brexit. It no longer has free movement. It's being told to stay. All of it to stay. And it's thinking, no, you've all got free movement around the house. I want that as well. So I think the dog eventually would say, can we stop with the stay thing? Right?
Yeah.
Again, if we can negotiate with the dog, all right, I'll agree that in my downtime, the dog's going, I've done a bit of ball chasing in the morning. I've rolled around in some shit in the afternoon. I've had a bath. I'm going to have a little sleep now. And you lot can move around. Do all the things you want to do. But it's in my downtime, so I'm no longer having to stay, boy. Stay.
It's almost as if that we, when it suits us, we want to send the dog back where it came from and we get freedom of movement. The dog must think we were like your average reform voter at this point, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the dog would definitely have a problem with the word stay. Right. What's your next one?
My last one is it's an annoyance I've had, but putting myself in the dog's perspective, it's the postie problem.
Yes.
It's that the dog must think, the owners, my owners, they don't know, but I've spotted this bastard wandering up our garden path.
Yeah.
And he approaches the house every single day, except Sundays for some reason that I haven't quite worked out yet, but yeah. I'll figure that out later. And then I start barking at him, and you know what? He never comes in, and I stare him out, I bark at him, I scare the bastard off, and then what do my owners do? They have a go at me for barking. And all I've done is try and protect the house,
yeah.
And it happens every day. And do I get any thanks for it? No.
I suppose if, again, we can talk to the dogs, we can explain what your purpose is. We can say, well, look, the man with the red T-shirt on comes every day because he's got goodies for us, letters for us that come through the door. So you don't need to be afraid. You don't need to defend us from him or her. It's just, it's fine, dog. You know, it's fine.
It does irritate me that I think, you know, when I've done it 1,000 times and the time number 1,000 comes round and they're just as angry as day one. And you think, really? Have you learned nothing? I'm not a threat. I get so annoyed. And I also get so annoyed walking away thinking that the dog must feel some sort of moral victory, even though it's not thinking that at all. I think you didn't win, by the way. You just don't understand what's going on here.
Well, I think the weird thing is you know, the dog thinks it's won because you've left. That is, for the dog, that's a victory because it's barked at you long enough that you've left. So the dog thinks, actually, if I bark at him or her, they go away. But the thing is, you come back again the next day. So it just goes, well, I've got to bark again until you go away. What you actually need to do, if you want to get a message across to a dog, and it involves some of your time, some of your spare time, you're going to have to pick the worst culprit on your round and make them the last of your round on the day. And then you're just going to have to set up camp in their front garden. So the dog essentially learns that you're not going away. Barking ain't making you go away. You just sit there till the dog tires itself out, and eventually will learn that actually you're not going to go away if I bark. So it'll probably end up thinking, better be nice to you. I'll be nicer to you. I'll come up and, you know, nuzzle into you.
The reason I can approach anyone's property at any time at work is because I have what's called implied right of access. It's a sort of given that I am allowed on your property because I've got something for you, and how else am I supposed to deliver it without going on your property? However, I think setting up camp might wander into trespass.
Well, if the dog's got to learn, you're going to have to, obviously you'll have to talk it through with the owners of the property. They're going to have to be behind the project. But I think everyone's going to come out of it better in the end. It's worth the time, Ben, is what I'm saying.
Well, trespass is a civil matter, so they're not going to have me nicked. They might be cross, but I'm here to prove a point.
Right, my last one. Now, this is something that I think a dog would see in human society and not really understand.
What's that?
Democracy. Because when you see a pack of dogs, it's the alpha male that will generally lead the pack, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing democratic about it. It's a tyrannical system, if anything, in the dog world, that the one with the sharpest teeth and the loudest bark is going to rule the roost, right?
So they would think that we should have a fight between Keir Starmer yes. and Rishi Sunak, and the winner of the fight, who has proved themselves to be the alpha male, they're the one who gets to be prime minister.
Yeah, or alpha female. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a male or female, but whoever is the leaders of the pack, or parties, as we will call them, but the leaders of those packs will have a fight to determine who leads them all. And I think that would probably be what dogs would see as our downfall as human beings, that we go every time to the polling station, we put our little cross against a name, and then we get some fucking dickhead leading us for a number of years, and then we do the same thing again, another fucking dickhead leads us for a few years, and we just continue this whole sort of series of dickheads running the country. No matter what pack they're from, they're always a dickhead. And the dog will just go, no, you've been getting this wrong, mate. This ain't how it works. Dogs have worked very successfully in the wild for millennia with our system. So, and in your system, it ain't working. So here we go.
How often do you think leadership challenges would be held? Like, is it just when someone gets super pissed off at the current prime minister, they just challenge them to a fight on the spot, and if they win, they're the new prime minister? Or is there any sort of reason, like every 4 years someone can challenge, or how does that work?
I think it depends on the mood of the dog, you know. If a dog wants to stray onto the territory of the leader dog, so let's say we've got the leader dog in the canine equivalent of number 10 Downing Street, and another dog of another pack thinks, well, I'm going to have a little sniff round, and it encroaches on the territory, then there's the fight. Like in the wild, you know, there's no rhyme or reason as to when the fights happen. I mean, often it's to do with mating season, isn't it? You know, it's often when they're a little bit more frisky is when they get a little bit more feisty. But maybe as it happens, we just have, I don't know, like if kissed, let's say Kemi Badenoch just thinks, right, I'm going to encroach on Keir Starmer's territory. And she creeps up. She creeps up on number 10, attempting to sniff his bottom. And then they have a fight. And if Kemi wins, she's in. Simple as that.
It would be a much fairer system. But I must say, I've become so despondent when it comes to politics these days. I would actually quite happily swap for a system of parliament run by Labradors. I really would.
Oh, I think Labradors would be the perfect dog to run a country, wouldn't they? They'd be a much better place for it. Now, Ben, it's a long time since we've done a quiz on the podcast.
It is quite a long time, isn't it?
And I have been sent a quiz by regular listener Steve. Thank you very much, Steve, for sending me this quiz. It's a pub quiz from a newspaper. And he says, I think you and Ben should have a go at this quiz. See how you get on.
Okay. Is there any reason? Is it a tough quiz? Is it how thick are you? How low is your IQ? Is he taking the piss? Or does he just genuinely think we'd enjoy it?
It does say it's a tricky quiz. So I wonder whether Steve just thinks, let's just see how thick These two are.
We're being framed. Great.
All right. Well, let's see how we get on. Play along as you listen as well. See how you get on wherever you are. Stop whatever you're doing. Join in the quiz. People like a quiz, don't they? I mean, I think whatever people are doing right now, because, you know, podcasts you listen to as you're doing other things, I think a quiz will stop people in their tracks, and I think people will take part in this. So if you're doing this, stop whatever you're doing.
It does. I mean, every day when I'm out of work during the week, I listen to a certain radio station and I always stop for a minute to do the quiz.
There you go. Right, here we go then. Question number one. These are multiple choice, by the way, but I'm not sure that's going to help on this particular question unless you know more about popular culture than I do.
You're not really hyping me up here. I mean, you're slagging me off before you've even asked the first question.
All right. I'm going to tell you now, if you know the answer to this, I am going to be slightly disappointed, actually.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Which Gladiator star is in the 2025 Strictly Come Dancing lineup? I'll give you the options. Emily Steele, Matt Morsia, Livy Sheldon, or Harry Ikenes Arite. I don't know how you say his name, but that's
fantastic,
the best
name
I can do. I don't know any of these people. I never liked Gladiators first time round. I don't know why they brought it back. Dreadful show. And Strictly Come Dancing, to me, I know it's very, very popular. I just think I'm sick of people singing and dancing on my telly. Can we just fucking stop it, please?
I can honestly tell you, hand on my heart, I don't think I've ever watched a single episode, a single minute of Strictly Come Dancing. It's so unappealing to me. It boggles my mind why that show is so popular.
I know.
I'm assuming it is the new class of gladiators, not the ones who are all in their 60s now.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
Not there's anything wrong with dancing in your 60s before you all shout at me, but I'm just made an assumption that it's probably the new batch. I don't know who they are. The only name in my sieve-like memory that I can even remember you said was somebody Sheldon, so I suggest we go with them.
All right, Livy Sheldon. We're going to go with Livy Sheldon. It's wrong.
Oh.
The answer was Harry Ikenes Arite, I think his name is, otherwise known as Nitro in Gladiators.
Nitro.
God. Okay, well, that's not a good start. All right, here we go again. Oh. Man, I don't think we're going to do well in this quiz. We have definitely been set up here. Right?
To be honest, I don't feel any shame. If I get 0 out of 10 and they're all questions about fucking Strictly Come Dancing and shit like that, I have no shame in losing that quiz.
This isn't about Strictly Come Dancing, but this is about something I've never heard of. In Prime Video's The Summer I Turned Pretty, ever heard of this show?
Nope.
Who does Belly get engaged to? I mean, I've never...
Belly.
I don't have Amazon Prime. I've never heard of this show. I've never heard of anyone called Belly. Frankly, it's a terrible name. Who's christened somebody Belly?
B-E-L-L-Y.
Yes, as in Jelly Belly, right?
Right.
Is it Conrad? Is it Cam Cameron? I mean, Cam Cameron? Who's written this? Like a five-year-old? Jeremiah or no one? I mean, take a punt, mate. I've no idea.
I'm going to rule out no one.
Okay. But why is it there?
I mean, this could be a big spoiler alert if anyone wants to watch whatever this show was called. I've already
put it out of my mind. Turned Pretty.
So the options were what again? And we're ruling out no one. What are the options?
Conrad, Cam Cameron, or Jeremiah?
I'm going to go Jeremiah.
Oh, yeah, I quite liked Cam Cameron, but we'll go with Jeremiah.
Okay, no, that's fine. I mean, I tell you what, we'll go with Cam Cameron because I chose the answer to number one. So we'll go with you. Cam Cameron.
All right. Cam Cameron. Wrong.
Yeah.
Guess what the answer is?
It's not Jeremiah, is it?
It is Jeremiah.
Oh. All right. Okay. Zero for two. Good start.
Okay. Right. Next one. Edinburgh Castle was built on top of which extinct volcano? Is it Ben Nevis, Castle Rock, Coulton Hill, or Arthur's Seat? Well, Arthur's Seat is sort of big hill in Edinburgh, but I don't think the castle's on that, is it?
I didn't know there was a volcano in Edinburgh.
I mean, it's an extinct volcano, obviously.
God, can they ever be extinct?
Well, it says it's in the question of which extinct volcano. It's extinct, it's dead. It's not never going to erupt again.
How can they know that? Sorry, this is going a bit of a tangent now, but how can you be sure that this thing isn't going to go off again?
There'll be volcanologists who know this sort of stuff, won't they?
Volcanologists.
I'm assuming that's a thing.
So. You just made that word up, didn't you?
It's definitely not Ben Nevis, because that's not in Edinburgh, is it, Ben Nevis?
Okay, so we're ruling out, what was it, Arthur's Seat and Ben Nevis.
I mean, Arthur's Seat is in Edinburgh, but I just don't think it's... I don't think the castle's built on that.
Okay, well, what were the other two options? Because at least we do know Arthur's Seat is in Edinburgh. We know that much.
Yeah, Castle Rock or Calton or Calton Hill. I'm tempted to say Castle Rock.
I mean, it kind of fits. It's a castle on a rock.
I mean, it could be the red herring, couldn't it?
It could be, or are we overthinking this?
Let's go with it. I'm going to tick it.
And?
Correct.
Oh, 1 point on the board. Well played.
Right, next one. Which member of the royal family once had a cameo on Coronation Street? Is it Prince William, King Charles III, Queen Camilla, or Queen Elizabeth II? It's not Queen Elizabeth II. She was never on Corrie. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Now, I'm assuming they can't have broken the illusion. They wouldn't have been like, I'm Charles the window cleaner. popping down to the pub for a pint. I'm assuming it had to be a royal visit of some sort on the cobbles of Coronation Street.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Charles hasn't popped up to have a row with Ken Barlow over Deirdre. Do you know what I mean? In The Rover's Return. That's not happened. I think it's either got to be Charles or Camilla. I mean, Charles does, he likes a little bit of showbiz, and he likes a little bit of acting. But I got this thing in my head that it's Camilla. I've just got this feeling that it's Camilla that turns up.
See, I think, personally, it will be King Charles III, but when he was the Prince of Wales.
Okay.
But we haven't agreed yet. If you've got some memory that it's Camilla, we'll go with that.
It's not a memory. It's just a gut feeling that somewhere in I've heard this, but I can't say yet that I know this, so... It's 50-50. Charles or Camilla, you pick.
I don't normally do this. I don't know. I don't normally throw my weight around, but I have a vague recollection of Charles popping up or it being reported. I don't think I watched it. I'd like to put my foot down and say Charles.
Okay. King Charles III. You're absolutely right, mate.
Well, yes!
You know more about Coronation Street than I do, and that's fine.
We are 2 out of 4.
Okay, next one. On which Greek island would you find the coastal town, I don't know how you say this, Oia, O-I-A, Oia? Is it Mykonos, Crete, Zakynthos, or Santorini?
Okay, I've heard of the first two.
Yeah.
I've heard of Mykonos and Crete. I haven't heard of the last two. That has no relevance to the question at all.
Well, no, just because you haven't heard of them doesn't mean they don't exist.
And I'm unsure how to pronounce this word as well. Oi!
Oi! Oi, have you been to... Oi! It's probably deeply offensive to Greek people. I mean, again, it's going to be a guess, isn't it? I've never been to Greece. I don't know. I'm drawn to Zakynthos.
For any reason?
No, just because it's got a Z in it. I like it.
And there's nothing... Of course, there's nothing about the name, is there, that's going to give it away. We don't even know how to pronounce it. Okay, I'll let you pick.
Going for it. It's wrong. It's Santorini.
Okay, we are 2 for 5.
Okay. Right. Oh, I think I know this.
Okay.
Ichthyophobia is the fear of which creatures?
Ichthyophobia.
I'll give you the options. It's birds, cats, fish, or kangaroos.
Birds, fish, cats, kangaroos.
A little bit of Greek knowledge would be a big help to you here.
Icarus flew too close to the sun. Ick, bird. Yeah. How's that?
Well, I can only say this because I know the answer. That's wrong.
What? That was... You even told me you used Greek knowledge, and I used the one thing I had in my arsenal. Icarus flew too close to the sun. Ichthyophobia. Icarus. And it's fucking wrong.
Well, I mean, it's a nice try, mate. I'll give you that. It's well thought through. But the Greek word for fish is ichthys, isn't it? So it's fish.
I'm in a really bad mood now.
I mean, if I get this wrong, there'll be real... Yeah, egg on my face. I'm sure it's fish. Yes, it's fish. Come on.
Okay, well, at least we got the right answer. Although telling me to use Greek and then I actually did and still got it wrong. That's just infuriating. But okay, right. We are 3 for 6.
Okay, next one. Oh, this is good. This is easy. We know this one.
Do we have a target score, by the way?
I don't know. We didn't sort of think about that, did we? What are we? How many out of what we've got now?
We've got 3 out of 6. We're on question 7.
Okay.
What do we deem as a pass?
I think if we can get to 7 out of 10, that'll be good.
Ooh, that seems steep, but okay, I'll stick with that.
Right, I'm confident with this one, though. Which 90s girl band had a hit single with Blame It on the Weatherman?
That was Bewitched.
We don't even need the other options, do we? We know it's Bewitched.
I'm certain.
Of course it is Bewitched.
Get in.
We've found our level now, haven't we?
We have. Although, alarmingly, we are 4 out of 7. So to achieve our target score, we must get the last 3 questions correct.
Okay. All right. Who played soldier Chris Taylor in the 1986 film Platoon?
2 years before I was born. So that's my get-out-of-jail-free card for not knowing the answer. I think... The actor John C. McGinley was in Platoon, and that's about as much as I know.
That's no help because it's not one of the options.
Fuck.
The options are Charlie Sheen, Tom Cruise, Willem Dafoe, Mel Gibson.
I'm almost certain Charlie Sheen's in Platoon.
I think Willem Dafoe is as well.
Are you sure?
I don't think Gibson and Cruise are. That's for certain. I think Sheen and Dafoe might be. But we're both very sure that Sheen's in it, aren't we?
I think we should lean towards... I know I said John C. McGinley, which was completely wrong, but I think we should probably lean to the person we're absolutely sure was in it.
Hang on.
Go on.
Was Charlie Sheen in Platoon? Was he definitely in it? It's not his dad. It's not Martin Sheen that's in Platoon, is it?
How old is Charlie Sheen, ballpark? Because in 1988, that's about... Sorry, 1986... That's like 50 years ago.
It's about 40 years ago, isn't it?
I mean, my maths is fucking terrible.
My job is not a maths question. Jesus Christ, mate.
Jesus, that would make me 48 otherwise. That would have been terrible.
He must be about 60 now, mustn't he? Must be about 60.
It's probably more likely to be a man in his sort of early 20s than his dad, who's probably in his 40s in a platoon.
Yeah. Right,
I don't know. You're making me very uncomfortable. You're making me second guess myself. I don't like it.
I'm going for it. Charlie Sheen. Correct.
Yes. You see? Double thinking.
We're getting through. Right.
We now have more answers correct on the board than incorrect, which is very good news. We have got 5 correct, 3 wrong. Question number 9 coming up. We need 2 more to get it full. Well, to get our pass grade of 7.
Right. This one's easy. Which of these is not a character in the board game Cluedo? Professor Plum, Miss Ruby, or Colonel Mustard?
It's Ruby.
Unless she's one of the newfangled characters, but Miss Ruby was never in the traditional game of Cluedo, and that's, of course, correct.
Good. I was worried there might be some dreadful Cluedo reboot that we'd missed.
Okay, final one. What is the name of the collectible monster doll toys that have proved popular with children this summer and spawned a range of fakes?
I have hope for this. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but I am almost certain when you read me the options, I will get it right.
La Fufus.
No, but that's close.
La Gugus.
No, that's wrong.
La Cucus.
No, that's wrong.
La Boobus.
That's the badger. Yep, La Boobus.
What's La Boobus? What is it?
I have absolutely no idea. I've seen sort of images of them. I don't really understand the appeal, but mind you, there are plenty of weird fads that have gone before us that I haven't really understood the appeal of. Pokemon cards, Pogs.
Yeah, yeah.
All these things that two people who are any older than you just think, what the fuck are you doing? But I think they're called La Boobus.
That's right. They are La Boobus. Correct.
And that is 7 out of 10.
I'll take that any day of the week. I've just looked up a La Boobu thing. Right? I think I should have said La Boobus rather than La Bubbus or whatever I said. I mean, man, they're fucking ugly. Who wants one of them? Do you remember the Cabbage Patch dolls back in the day? Probably a bit before your time. Like, they were fucking horrible. Don't buy these things. They're horrible.
No, the Cabbage Patch dolls and things like that were sort of terrifying accidentally. These, I think, are designed to be disturbing.
Oh, well, they are fucking awful. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations. Got anything for us this week, Ben?
I do. It's not one of our regular style recommendations, but I do have one nonetheless. And I will preface this by saying I don't want to sound in any way preachy or judgmental or anything. I have found myself spending far too much time on TikTok. And whilst you occasionally get the odd video that makes you chuckle, afterwards, I put my phone back down and it's been an hour. And I think, my God, what a fucking waste of time. That's an hour I'll never get back. There must be something more productive I can do with my time. If you like watching TikTok and that's how you want to spend your time, fill your boots. However, I thought, is there something more constructive I can do with my time? And I downloaded a chess app from chess.com. And it gives you little lessons, little tutorials, little puzzles. You can play it for free. You can also pay about £109 for a year's subscription, which means you get unlimited everything and all that stuff. But you can play for free. You don't have to play against real life opponents if you don't feel ready for it. And to me, it's just, I feel like I've not wasted quite so much time if I'm learning something or improving something rather than just doom scrolling for days. So my weird little recommendation this week is, if you want to spend some time doing something a bit better than just scrolling through TikTok, try chess.com.
That's about the most middle class recommendation we've ever had.
Thank you.
Chess. Incredible. I'm going to recommend a new podcast. Well, it's not a new podcast. It's a podcast that's new to me. I've just come across this. It's called A Short History Of. And each episode is that, a short history of something. And I've only listened to two so far. One about the Mitford sisters and the one about the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings.
Maybe some lighthearted then.
Yeah, not the most cheerful subject. But they're really well made. I mean, there's 222 episodes. So there's a whole gamut of topics, but as I said, I've only come across it. I've just listened to two, but so far it's getting 5 stars from me.
Interesting. And how long is each episode roughly?
Sort of 55 minutes ish.
Oh wow, that's not that brief. That's quite long.
Well, it's quite brief when you consider the things they're talking about, you know.
Yeah, I suppose in perspective, yes, that's true.
I'm going to give you a few of the other titles I've got here. The Shroud of Turin, Marie Antoinette, The Stone Age, Captain Cook, Anne Frank, Alfred Hitchcock, The Anglo-Saxons, The Salem Witch Trials. So there's a whole range of stuff to listen to.
That sounds good.
And the other thing I'm going to recommend, I mean, it's a very old film now, but every time it's on telly, I record it and watch it, and it's been on the telly recently, is Misery, my probably favourite Stephen King novel. And the film is, I mean, it's not quite as graphic as the book at times, because the book is quite shocking and the film's shocking, but the book, whoa, it goes a bit further. But it's such a great film. I've just watched it again. You dirty birdie. You dirty birdie.
is this your best Kathy Bates, is it?
Yeah. I'm your number one fan.
She's a hell of an actress, but not all of Stephen King's books do well as films, believe me. But is a classic.
Misery does. So if you've never seen it, I think it's on the BBC iPlayer still. If you've never seen it, I mean, I would say read the book first, because I did it the other way around. I saw the film before I'd read the book, and it was only when I read the book, when it came to the sort of, what they call it, the nobbling or hobbling scene where she breaks his legs.
Spoiler alert.
Well, it's about 50 years old, mate. Come on. The book's way more graphic, and I remember reading the book going, oh, this wasn't in the film. But it's just a great film. So, yeah, if you've ever seen it, watch it, you dirty birdies. So that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trevor Bill on X and Blue Sky, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.